Hello, everyone. I'm Drew.
I'm Bailey.
I'm Lacey.
And we're sarcastic, so let's get sinister. I feel like it's been a while since I said that.
Yeah. I have some fun, interesting things I saw on TikTok.
Okay, you share that while I get this set up.
The news. So, have either of you guys seen that people have been charged for Matthew Perry's case?
Yes. I think I heard that from one of you. I think one of you.
I texted Lacey about it because I know how much she cares about him.
I'm still mad.
I care about him too.
Sorry, I know very few things about Lacey. One of the few things that I know is that she loves Friends.
You know very few things about, like, your best friend
that
and maid of honor?
I barely know her.
It's true. We actually just got her off the street.
Yeah, she likes the TV show Friends, and she likes bananas.
And she teaches?
Sometimes. Yeah, but what grade?
I think it's, like, art, too. It's nothing important.
I'm such an artist.
But anyway, one of the doctors who supplied the ketamine, because apparently he was on ketamine, pled guilty, and he'll be sentenced next April.
Nice. Get him.
Which, like, I read into it, too, and Perry's assistant, like, supposedly worked with two of the doctors to provide him with ketamine going up to like $50,000 worth. Just a lot of fucking ketamine.
Yeah. I think there was also like a, they also had like, there was like a drug dealer that was like arrested named like Queen K or something.
Well,
like
one article said that at least five people are getting charged in like correlation with his death.
Mm-hmm. All right, any other news before we hop right in?
We have merch.
Well, we do.
Tell? No.
Oh.
We have merch.
It's a secret.
That you can actually buy. We have a merch store set up.
Apparently.
It's not a secret.
According to Bailey.
I'm in the middle of something right now.
Oh, she's like selling.
I don't remember what the website is, but we'll probably link it places.
Yeah. It's on Shopify,
we'll
definitely. But yeah, we'll link it.
We'll know next time.
It's new. We're still getting it set up.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Any other news?
No, I'm ready to go.
All right.
All right.
Learn about this man.
So, the last man executed in our state of Pennsylvania had black coffee and two slices of cheese pizza as his last meal. I thought you guys find that interesting.
Could be
together.
Worse.
Yeah, like that. What do you want for your last meal? Two slices of cheese pizza and a black coffee.
Doesn't seem like it mixes.
No, it also seems dull.
Pizza was his favorite. And plain bean water is also his favorite.
Who the fuck refers to it as that?
When it's just black coffee, that's all it is.
Okay.
Plain bean water.
He spent his last day meeting with one of his three children and a spiritual advisor. He was lying on a gurney with a sheet covering most of his body when the lethal injection was given. He had no final words before his face turned bright red, then ashen. At 10:29 p.m. on July 6, 1999, Gary Heidnick was pronounced dead, and witnesses applauded while one shouted, "Thank you, Jesus."
Didn't realize he was executed in our state.
Yeah, he did he did all of his crimes in Philly.
Also, I didn't realize that we ever had executions in our state.
I think through my research, I found out that, like, three people have been put to death in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
It's a very low number.
Yeah, because I was like, I feel like, no offense to our southern states, but I feel like it correlates more with like them.
Yeah.
When I think of executions, there's a couple states I think of, and we're not one of them.
So a total of 1,043 people have been executed in Pennsylvania since 1693. So, it's a, I don't know, what's the average?
Think days pretty
1693
much speak for themselves. It seems
in
pretty.
331 years. A little over 1,000 people. Anyway,
It's not that bad.
so Gary Michael Heidnik was born November 22nd, 1943, in East Lake, Ohio. If you're not familiar with the location of the town, do you guys want to try and venture a guess as to where it is located in the state?
You said East Lake, Ohio.
I know so little about Ohio.
I'm gonna go, is it, but like, so is it
Okay.
Ohio or is it
Hold on.
Pennsylvania?
Lacey,
Yeah.
you know so little about Ohio, but you're an English teacher. Let's look at the word East Lake.
It's on the west side of Ohio.
But on the east side of the West Lake.
No.
Interesting.
The east side of one of that Lake Erie. That's it.
Ooh.
I was going to say that the big lake that
There's a
is there.
lot.
Yeah, but the one that borders Ohio. Gary was the oldest of two sons born to Michael and Ellen Heidnik. Gary's parents divorced in 1946, shortly after his brother was born. His brother Terry and he were initially raised by their mother until both boys were taken and placed in the care of their father in 1950. One source said the divorce and subsequent removal of the boys were due to Ellen's alcoholism. Michael had remarried, and allegedly, Gary and Terry hated their stepmother. Later, Gary would say that Michael abused and mocked him.
Wait. Did you, what's his brother's name?
Gary and Terry, you're stuck on that too?
Yeah.
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 I didn't notice it at first, but then when you said their names together, I was like, what?
His mom was an alcoholic.
Well, we can see.
Gary said that his dad abused him. Gary struggled with bedwetting for most of his life, and as a punishment, his father would force him to hang his soiled sheets from the window so that the neighbors could see what he did.
Oh, that's mean.
Yeah. Following Gary's arrest, his dad, Michael, would deny those claims of abuse. He said it didn't happen.
Well, looks suspicious when he says it like that.
Yeah, didn't happen.
Yeah, like he just doesn't want to be blamed for what his son turned into.
Yeah. At age 6, Gary fell from a tree, fracturing his skull.
Oh.
He survived, obviously, but suffered a misshapen head as well as behavioral issues, which some attribute to the head injury.
Some attribute to the head
Yeah,
injury.
I mean they don't know if it's because he hit his head or if it's just behavioral issues.
Okay.
So for example, he rarely socialized with his peers and refused to make eye contact with others. On one occasion, a new student who was female asked him if he'd gotten his homework done. Gary responded by yelling that she wasn't worthy enough to speak to him.
Okay.
Little bit of an overreaction, I
He
think.
knows his worth.
He knows his worth.
He knew she just wanted his answers, you know? He
Fair
said,
point.
"You dumb girl. Not
He
my answers."
was also bullied by his peers, which also may have influenced his behavior. Like, if you're going to be bullied, why would you make eye contact with people? They teased him about his head shape. They called him football.
They called him what?
They called him football head.
Kind of like
Yeah.
what was the cartoon? Hey
Hey
Arnold.
Arnold. But I mean, if you look at his military photo there in the slideshow, I think it's the other orientation
Oh,
rather than
long ways.
Arnold. Yeah.
Some people just have long heads.
Yeah. I mean, he did fall out of a tree and fracture his head, but
Yeah.
sure. Despite the injury to the head and the behavior issues, Gary performed well academically with an IQ of 148.
Ooh.
Boy.
So he's a smart guy with a head injury and some behavior problems. Do you think he's going to do well in life?
It's giving a little bit of Ed Kemper.
Probably do. I couldn't remember who it was, but I was like, we had somebody else who was like really
Ed.
smart and socially fucked up.
So at age 14, Gary's father encouraged him to enroll at the Stoughton Military Academy in Stoughton, Virginia. Gary studied there for 2 years before leaving and returning to public high school. Some sources say that Gary dropped out at 17, while others say he graduated at 18. Either way, he enlisted in the U into the U.S. Army in 1961. His
My mom was
military
born.
career, huh?
My mom was born in 1961.
Great. That's great news.
Fun fact.
His military career seemed to have started off successful. His drill sergeant graded him as excellent, and he applied for several specialist positions, including military police. He was rejected for those positions. Instead, he was assigned to San Antonio, Texas, where he trained as a medic. So he's got medical training.
I honestly don't like this.
Following his medical training, Gary was transferred to the 46th Army Surgical Hospital in West Germany. In August 1962, Gary began complaining of headaches, dizziness, blurred vision, and nausea. A hospital neurologist diagnosed him with gastroenteritis and noted that he also displayed symptoms of mental illness. Gary was prescribed an antipsychotic medication primarily used to treat schizophrenia.
Oh.
2 months. Without a diagnosis of schizophrenia, they were just like, you've got something, so we're going to put you on this.
It was the 60s. I don't know.
Okay.
2 months later, in October 1962, Gary was transferred to a military hospital in Philadelphia,
Gilbert.
where he was diagnosed with schizoid personality disorder. Schizoid personality disorder is a condition where a person shows very little, if any, interest and ability to form relationships with other people. It's very hard for the person to express a full range of emotions. Symptoms of this disorder include the desire to be alone, little desire for sexual relationships, difficulty expressing emotions, and a lack of drive to reach one's goals. Following his diagnosis, Gary was honorably discharged from the military after serving for a little over a year. After being discharged, Gary became a licensed practical nurse, so an LPN, and began taking classes at the University of Pennsylvania before he dropped out after 1 semester. He worked at a VA hospital in Chester County, PA, but was fired for poor attendance and being rude towards patients. You
I just feel
found
like the temptation to be rude towards patients for people in healthcare is probably so strong.
funny? In 1970, Ellen Heidnik committed suicide. She'd been diagnosed with bone cancer and was suffering the side effects of alcoholism. So on May 31st, 1970, Ellen drank a disinfectant called mercuric chloride, which is corrosive to mucous membranes and quite toxic when ingested.
Which, if you
Don't know
don't
where she got it from.
know, mucous membranes pretty much lie in your entire body. But if
Sounds
she had
horrendous.
bone cancer, I could kind of get it.
Yeah.
It's an interesting way to choose to go, but
Yeah, I feel like there's less aggressive.
painful ways?
Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah.
Following her suicide, Gary made his first of many suicide attempts. Over the next 2 decades, Gary would spend time in and out of psychiatric hospitals. And he attempted suicide at least 13 times. His brother, remember Terry,
Yeah.
he also spent time in psych hospitals as well as attempting suicide multiple times. So I don't know for sure if the fall from the tree caused all of Gary's issues, because it
Well, I
seems
guess there
that.
is a lot of nurture too, and
Or lack thereof. In October 1971, Gary decided to devote himself to religion. So he started a church.
what kind of church?
He called it the United Church of the Ministers of God. It was located in North Philly.
Go Birch.
He
Is that
only
where
had
you're from?
five followers. However, he opened an investment account under the church's name with only $1,500, and it quickly amassed over $500,000, which
So it's not about the size of your church, but the quality of the people. And also, go Phils, because we're going into we have Red October, so playoffs.
Yeah, also, he invested $1,500 and came out with $500,000, which today would be close to $3 million.
Nice.
That's nice.
It was around this time in 1971 that Gary decided, you know what? It was time for him to settle down. He needed a wife and some children.
Oh, Gare Bear.
Yeah. He had this fantasy of having a big, happy family of his own, possibly because his family growing up was not ideal. So
Fair. Yeah, I could see that.
later, after his arrest, Gary's friend John Cassidy told Philadelphia Magazine that Gary always dated black women with mental disabilities. One of his girlfriends was named Gail Linko. However, or together, they had a son whom they named Gary Jr. Gary Jr. was put into foster care shortly after he was born, and that's the last we know about him.
Oh, good for him staying off the radar.
Yeah, he's got a very
I hope he had an unusually pleasant experience in foster care.
he's very specific
Type?
yeah.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Gary made himself a bishop. And he would hunt for parishioners
First,
at a McDonald's in Philly.
which one?
I actually could tell you.
Yeah.
Oh God. It was near the Elwin Institute.
I don't know where that is.
It was so, hold on. My source actually used an address for that McDonald's, but I was like, I don't know if I should. Near the
Oh, okay.
Many of the people he met there were from the nearby Elwin Institute, a school for the mentally challenged. Heidnik would get the people he met to go to services at his home, where they would read the Bible, after which he would have sex with the women.
Sure. Sounds like he's getting ready to start his own cult.
He made his own religion. Of course he is. That's what a
Not his own
cult.
religion. No. Not his own religion, just his own church. They still read the Bible. But he is in charge.
Got it.
In 1976, Gary purchased a three-story house and rented out two of the floors. He moved into the one floor with his new girlfriend, Anjanette Davidson, who was mentally disabled. The details aren't clear, but at some point in 1976, Gary was charged with aggravated assault and carrying an unlicensed gun after he shot at one of his tenants. The bullet grazed the man's face, and that's all we know about that.
Okay.
Was he punished?
You
Who knows?
know, when some people skip out on their rent,
It can be very frustrating. I understand.
yeah.
So I don't know what punishment he received for those crimes, but it must not have been like 10 years in prison because he was capable of impregnating Anjanette in 1977. So the next year, she gave birth to their daughter, Maxine Davidson, in March of 1978. Maxine, like her half-brother before her, was immediately placed into foster care. Shortly after Maxine's birth, Gary was arrested for kidnapping, rape, unlawful restraint, false imprisonment, involuntary deviant sexual intercourse, and interfering with the custody of a committed person. So, at some point in 1978, Gary traveled to Harrisburg State Hospital to sign Anjanette's sister, Alberta Davidson, out on day leave. Mm-hmm. Alberta was also disabled and was a resident of the hospital. Gary took her back to his house in Philly, where he locked her in a storage room in the basement. After she was found, she was returned to the hospital. Upon examination, it was determined that she had been raped and sodomized, and she had contracted gonorrhea. Gary went to trial for those crimes in November of 1978, but because Alberta was deemed mentally unfit to take the stand, Heidnik was only convicted of the less serious charges. He was sentenced to 3 to 7 years in prison and ultimately served a little over 4. He spent the majority of his incarceration in mental institutions before being released in April of 1983. So we've got a little glimpse of, like, his pathology, or his MO, I guess. Modus operandi. So upon his release, he couldn't find Anjanette. Where did she go? He felt that he was owed a wife and family because, you know what? He had a girlfriend. He had a daughter. Mm-hmm. And the state took them both away. Rude. They took his daughter and put her into foster care. And had he not been arrested, he would still have his girlfriend and Annette. So he used a matrimonial service in 1983 to meet a woman in the Philippines named Betty Disto. I have a picture.
At least he's getting attacked by a tail right now.
I see. That's Betty. They exchanged letters for about 2 years before Betty traveled to the U.S. in September of 1985. She and Gary married in Maryland on October 3rd, 1985. So the following month.
It's like 90 Day Fiancé.
Exactly.
But one of them is crazy.
Except... a little twist to 90 Day Fiancé. The marriage quickly became an utter disaster.
Yeah, I was thinking this is right on par.
It ended within a few months when Disto went to the police in January, accusing Heidnik of raping her. Heidnik was charged with indecent assault, spousal rape, assault, and involuntary deviant sexual intercourse. But all the charges were dropped after Disto failed to show up for her first hearing. She had fled with the aid from Philadelphia's Filipino community and went into hiding. Unbeknownst to either of them at the time, Betty was pregnant.
Oh, no.
She gave birth to a son on September 15th, 1986, whom she named Jesse John Disto. She contacted Heidnik for child support in 1987. Which is when Gary first became aware that he had another child.
Why? If she, like, didn't send him away, but, like, went into hiding, why would she reach out for child support? Because that is just putting you right back on his radar.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I will say that she and her son were both on welfare, so...
Like, I mean, I get that part, but, like, isn't your safety a little bit... more important?
What I meant when I said that was that typically, from my understanding from watching Judge Judy, in order for you to receive welfare, you have to, like, make an attempt to receive child support.
Oh, it's annoying.
Yeah. Although if she had, like, gotten a restraining order, or if he had been in prison, that would have, I think, changed things. But because...
Can they pay child support if they're in prison?
I don't know.
I mean, you can make money. You can get wages in prison. It's, like, super tiny.
$0.05.
Yeah. So I was going to say, I wonder if they could garnish those, but it would be, like, it would be nothing.
It would be, like, $1 a month.
Yeah, like...
I think it would all go into arrears. Anyway, Heidnik never had a relationship with Jesse, probably because Betty stayed away from him. So, where are we? It's 1986. Gary Heidnik was 43 years old. He had several failed relationships. He had two children in foster care, another son with whom he had no contact. His fantasy of having that big, happy family was not coming to fruition. So clearly,
I feel like he should look in the mirror a little bit.
Oh, that would have been a good idea. Instead, you are right. He did change his tactics.
Oh, no.
And he formed a new plan.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm.
So, there she is. Josefina Rivera was 25 years old with three kids in 1986. However, her kids had been removed from her care because she'd been battling drug addiction and was working as a sex worker to fund her habit. She was told that she needed to have a stable income and living situation if she wanted her kids returned to her. She continued sex work as a means to an end. One night in late November 1986, a well-dressed man driving a nice white Cadillac pulled up next to her and asked to take her back to his place. Usually, Josefina never entertained clients in their own home, but she made an exception for this man. She said that his nice car, the fact that he was well-dressed, a little bit more trusting. Can you guess who that man was?
Gary or Terry, for sure.
Okay, well, I'm just going to tell you real quick. Terry does not make a reappearance in the story.
Was it...
hard to forget about him.
Bill Gates. Bill Clinton.
It was Gary Heidnik.
Oh.
So close.
He drove Josefina back to his house on Marshall Street in North Philadelphia.
Born and raised.
Go Birds, go Phils!
Josefina first felt uneasy when she noticed that the front door had two locks, meaning you couldn't open the door from the inside without a key.
Oh.
She ignored that gut feeling and entered the home. The interior was just as unsettling. Pennies were glued to the walls, and the upstairs hallway was covered in dollar bills.
You want to keep your money where you can see it. Never trust a bank.
And also, if anyone tries to rob you, it's a real pain in the ass to rip that wallpaper off.
One penny at a time. They'd give up quick.
The furniture was old and broken. There was a TV and a tape player that appeared to be the only functional thing in the home. Josefina followed Gary upstairs. There they had sex on his waterbed.
Ooh.
Oh, waterbeds. Remember those?
Where is he getting his money? He has a nice, well, Cadillac or whatever and a waterbed.
Do you remember how he invested $1,500 and then came out with $1 million?
Yeah. No, I do remember that. I just thought he would have, like, lost it by doing something stupid by now, but...
No, he put it on his wall. Like,
legal fees.
And do you know where he got that $1,500 from? It was a disability check from the military.
Oh. I mean, he made it work for him.
Yeah. So when they finished on his waterbed, Josefina started getting dressed. Gary snuck up behind her, grabbed her by the neck, and began to choke her from behind.
Rude.
Josefina fought with him and recalled him saying, quote, "If you stop struggling, I'm not going to keep choking you." So she stopped. He took her down to his basement. She remembers seeing a big hole in the floor and plastic bags full of dirt stacked in the corner. He shackled her legs to a chain and sealed the bolts in with super glue. So, like, put the super glue on top of the bolts so she couldn't untwist them slowly. He told her he was going to get her pregnant, then he'd raise the children. He put her in the hole in the floor and tried to put a board over top of it, but the hole wasn't deep enough, so he had to force it.
Oh.
Josefina was in a really confined position and started having trouble breathing, so she began to scream for help. Gary pulled her out of the hole by her hair, beat her with a stick until she stopped. He put her back in the hole and left her there for days. The next thing she heard was the sound of Gary and a girl talking as they came down the stairs. He was telling the girl to be quiet. Sandra Lindsay was 24 when she was imprisoned by Gary Heidnik on Friday, December 3rd, 1986. She had an intellectual disability and had known Gary for years. She had been walking to a store when Gary offered her a ride. He brought her down to the basement, shackled her by the feet, and raped her, forcing Josefina to watch. He later would tell Josefina that Sandra had told him that she would have had his baby, but that she kept backing out of it. So, obviously, that gives him cause to imprison her in his basement.
It's all about what he wants.
Mm-hmm. He wants a family, Bailey, and nobody is giving it to him.
You know, but like sometimes it's okay just to kind of give up on a dream.
He just wants to prove that he'll be a good father.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
By taking care of these women in his basement.
Yes.
So meanwhile, Sandra's sisters, one of which was Tracy Lomax, and her mother began to worry. On Monday, they called the police. So she was kidnapped on Friday. Monday, they called the police. Detective Julius Armstrong arrived, and one of the first questions he asked Sandra's mother was, quote, "Why are you worried about your daughter? She's 25.
Sandra's family, stop caring about your kids.
At 18, you don't have to take care of them anymore.
You're done.
Exactly. Sandra's family lost faith in Armstrong right away. Later, Detective Armstrong would defend himself by saying that once he found out that Sandra had a job, he felt that she was very functional and had enough intelligence and pride to be on her own. So I guess that Sandra's family was like, she has disabilities. It's not normal for her to be away for 4 days. And he was like, she's got a job. She's capable.
Fine.
Exactly. But Sandra had told her family about this guy named Gary, who was a bishop of a church. He had told Sandy that he was going to take Sandy and her friends to Great Adventure, and he was always buying them dinner at McDonald's. So Tracy, her sister, went and staked out the McDonald's. When she recognized a friend of Sandy's, she asked him for Gary's information. She called and asked Gary where Sandy was. He responded, "She's not here," and hung up. So Sandy's sisters went to his house. No really one was home.
Fries now?
They're doing great detective work.
That I could really go for some McDonald's fries.
Yes. No one was home. So, according to Josefina, around that time, Gary came down to the basement with a box of Christmas cards, and he made Sandy write in the cards. He made her write things like, "Dear Mom, I am all right, don't worry, love, Sandy." Then he put on gloves, gave her a $20 bill, and he had her put that dollar bill in the card. He wouldn't touch it himself. He then drove to New York to mail the card. Sandy's family was suspicious and asked Detective Armstrong to have a handwriting analysis look at it. Armstrong, however, was satisfied that Sandy was fine and missing voluntarily. They were like, "This isn't right." And he was like, "Did you read it? She said she's
fine.
She
has a job.
She's probably working in New York." So, a few days before Christmas, so, just a reminder, Josefina was kidnapped towards the end of November, I believe. Yes. Late November. Sandy was kidnapped in the beginning of December, and now we are a few days before Christmas. Josefina and Sandy heard Gary coming down the stairs with another girl. He and Lisa Thomas had gone on a date on December 23rd, 1986. They went to TGI Fridays. Gary drank a martini while Lisa had a cheeseburger and fries. Then Gary took Lisa to Sears and Robux and told her to spend up to $50. Then they went back. I know. Big spender. He left all his money on his walls. Also Sears.
I feel like Sears.
Buy a vacuum, baby.
I feel like Sears used to be like nice, and then I don't know. Are they bankrupt yet? I thought I kept on hearing that, like as I was growing up.
I think that was I think
I think they're pretty much gone.
I thought it was J.C. Penney. Then they went back to his house where they watched a movie and drank a beer. Then they went upstairs and had sex. Afterwards, Gary began to choke her like he did to Josephina. She begged him to stop, saying she could do what she would, saying he could do whatever he wanted. Just stop. He handcuffed her and took her down to the basement. There he put chains on her ankles and put her with Josephina and Sandy. Lisa was 19 years old when she was kidnapped. So in the first month, Gary would only feed Josephina and Sandy water, crackers, Pop-Tarts, rice, and hot dogs.
You
A
said
balanced diet.
what'd you say? Water, hot dogs, cracker.
Water, crackers, Pop-Tarts, rice, and hot dogs.
Mean, you got protein, carbs.
Yeah.
You don't really have any vegetables though.
Pop-Tarts?
Pop-Tarts would have fruit. He got the right flavor.
He would rape them every day. He counted the links in the chains on their ankles to make sure that they were wide enough. They were kept primarily naked, and the women would huddle together for warmth. After Lisa's abduction, he reportedly switched to raping them every other day. Was a lot of work.
Yeah. I mean, it's exhausting.
To celebrate Christmas, he let them choose meals from a Chinese restaurant menu. Isn't he a gem?
You know, that's
He's a
kind of
good guy.
thoughtful.
It's kind of what?
Thoughtful.
Yeah. When any of the women screamed for help or attempted to escape, Heidnik would punish them in various ways. One method consisted of forcing the women to stand suspended by their handcuffed wrists from a hook, which had been installed in the basement rafters. So, like a week and a half later, on January 2nd, 1987, Gary abducted his fourth victim, Deborah Dudley. Debbie was 23 and had been living on the streets. Not much is known about how she met Gary. There's a reason for that. After he put the shackles on Debbie, he put her in the hole. Debbie yelled all night, so Gary came down and beat her a couple times with a stick. Gary used two sticks. One had nails in the end, and it would leave sores on them. But Debbie refused to cooperate. And that's a consistent thing. She never gave up. A little over 2 weeks later, on January 18th, 1987, Gary abducted Jacqueline Askins, an 18-year-old girl working as a sex worker. Gary had told Josephina, Sandy, Lisa, and Debbie that he was going out to get Josephina a birthday cake. Her birthday was on the 19th. So it was January 18th. He said, "Hey girls, I'm going to go out and get Josephina a birthday cake for her birthday tomorrow." Instead, he went out and got Jackie. He
His
offered to
face
pay
is already
her.
getting crowded.
Yeah, and
And
like, I didn't read anywhere that he expanded the size of the hole.
was just gonna
So.
ask if Josephina's still stuck in that hole.
No, he would take them out. There were some mattresses. I mean, in the
I
picture you
see
can
that in the
see.
picture of the mattress, yeah.
There's the hole there on the bottom right. That picture above it is, I think, a police officer was filling it in. And then they have a mattress there. So, he also like he used the hole as a punishment. Josephina eventually spent a lot of time outside the hole. But they were always chained up. So, when he approached Jackie, he offered to pay her just to hang out with him for half an hour. They played video games for about 30 to 45 minutes. Then Gary suddenly put Jackie in a headlock. He took her down to the basement at that point. So the women were subjected to rape and torture for the whole time that they were in captivity. Gary would, another form of punishment was if they would scream, he would put gags in their mouths, then push screwdrivers into their ears.
Oh my god.
At first he used small screwdrivers, but then he slowly increased the size. The theory behind why he did that was if they couldn't hear when he was coming or going, they wouldn't scream when he was gone.
I'll tell you that watching him do that to one of the other girls would stop me ever screaming.
I could tell you I'm currently going through an ear infection. And just the doctor, like, I had to go for a recheck, and he put the, like, ear cone, like, back in my ear.
Honestly.
It's a little aggressive about it. That fucking hurts so bad.
Yeah. After Jackie was abducted, Gary made the girls beat each other if one of them was bad. Josephina later said that she felt Gary was handling them like they were in the military. And the girls started to turn on each other. But Josephina, having been with Gary the longest, had had plenty of time to study him and notice behavior patterns. She noticed that Heidnik actually seemed to care what the women thought of him. Josephina thought that she could befriend him as a means to escape. She did as he wished and professed her understanding whenever she had the chance. Eventually, Heidnik allowed her upstairs to cook for him and watch movies together. So she's gaining his trust.
Also, the fact that, like, he was, like, turning the girls against each other is actually, like, pretty smart, too.
Yeah. I mean, I will say that, like, the fact that Josephina gained his trust is good, but the other girls really hated her because they were thinking that she was an accomplice. Well, yeah.
He, like, was determining, like, he tried to create a hierarchy, and Josephina kind of just, like, I mean, you have to do what you can for yourself, like, in the survival mode, but, like, she kind of, it looks like, from their point of view, that she's, like, feeding into it.
Yeah. So, as Gary's trust in Josephina grew, he started letting her do more things. He took her on outings. One day, Gary took Josephina to visit a friend to discuss putting a fence in his backyard. Gary and his friend John had to run an errand in John's truck, but there was no room for Josephina. John later reported that, quote, this is all quotes from John. Gary said, "She'll stay here at the gas station. Meanwhile, there were two police cars sitting there. She was supposed to be a captive. Well, she didn't seem like a captive. I know later they were talking about Stockholm Syndrome or something, but she didn't appear to be a captive to me at all." So I just want to say that I fully believe that Josephina is a victim. But because it's part of the story and what happened, I feel compelled to mention that there was some talks about Stockholm Syndrome. After Josephina escaped, she told reporters, quote, "Anytime that you're cut off from the world outside, whoever's holding you captive, you're going to grow to like him regardless, because he's your only contact to things that are outside. He's your only source of survival." She also mentioned that the reason why she didn't go to the police right then was because she truly felt that if she had, Gary would have gone home and killed the girls. And her main goal was to get herself and all the other girls out of there alive.
Yeah, I first thought that too, like.
So eventually, Josephina's plan worked and Gary made her boss of the other captives. Whenever Gary left the house, Josephina was left in charge of the others. If she obeyed him and stayed in his good graces, he'd bring her hot chocolate and hot dogs and let her sleep outside the hole, which is another way to, like, build resentment between the women. Because they're getting crackers and water and she's getting hot chocolate and hot dogs. So in early February, Sandy was eating bread and water when Gary became upset. He felt she was taking too long, but she did have a pre-existing problem with her jaw, so she couldn't eat quickly. Gary began to hit her, yelling at her to hurry up. He ordered Lisa to beat her too. When that didn't work, Gary decided to punish her and use her as an example to the others. So he did that thing where he hung her up by the wrists from the rafters. He left her there, though, for 3 days. On the third day, Lisa remembers thinking that Sandy was sleeping. So she went over to try and wake her up. It didn't work. Gary came downstairs and said she was just playing, but she was not. She basically suffocated because with her arms up above her head, it cut off her oxygen and she fell asleep and died. Josephina later said Gary took her chains off and he carried her body upstairs. I could see that Gary was upset. We were all upset because we didn't know what he was going to do. I was afraid that he would panic and take it out on all of us. Later on, we could hear a sound like an electric saw. Then we started to smell a terrible odor for like 3 or 4 days.
Yeah.
Neighbors also smelled an odor. One neighbor, named Doris, asked Gary about it, and he denied smelling anything foul and accused that neighbor of not liking the smell of his cooking. Unsatisfied by that response, Doris called the police. Officer Julio Aponte arrived and knocked on Gary's door. No response. He went to the back door and knocked. No response. But while he was back there, he peeked through the rear window and saw a large pot on the stove overboiling. And the smell was worse at the rear of the house. Finally, Gary answered the door and told the cop that he had been cooking a roast, fell asleep, and the roast burnt. The officer left.
Oh, sure.
So it sounds good. Spoiler alert, he lied to the officer. Mm-hmm. After Sandra Lindsay died, Gary dismembered her body. He put her arms and legs in the freezer and labeled them dog food. He put her ribs in the oven, and he put her head in a pot on the stove. According to Heidnik, he ground Sandra's flesh up and mixed it with dog food, then fed it to the other victims. He said that he had let three of the women watch TV, and one of them angered him by saying that she was so hungry that the dog food in the commercial looked appetizing. He told her she'd get dog food, and she and the others would eat it. Later, Heidnik's attorney, Chuck Peruto, refuted this account, saying that upon examination of a Cuisinart, Lacey?
Mm-hmm.
Is that how you say it?
Yeah.
Okay. And other tools in his kitchen, they found no evidence that a body was ground up. Peruto said that Heidnik made up the story to support the insanity defense. Peruto said that Heidnik started the rumor of cannibalism in public and that there was no evidence of anyone eating human flesh.
I know we're not there yet.
Yeah.
But how do you go for insanity when he clearly planned this out?
Don't worry about it.
I don't have an answer for you. They did.
Okay.
In mid-March, Gary went out. When he returned home, he found that the remaining women were trying to call for help. He instructed Josephina to hook the hose up to the sink and fill the hole with water. With water in the hole, Gary began touching the chains with a hot wire from an electrical extension.
Jesus.
The women screamed and begged him to stop. Gary told them to be quiet and he'd stop. Debbie refused. Gary gave Josephina the wire and told her to hold it to Debbie's chains. When Debbie continued to scream, Gary took the wire back and held it to the chain for minutes. Then everything got quiet.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that is where I'm going to end part one.
Oh.
The fuck?
I didn't tell you it was a poop pot of surprise.
You also, just abruptly stopped.
No, I feel like that's a good spot.
I'm on a cliffhanger and I don't appreciate it.
Yeah, exactly. That's
appreciate it.
Good cliffhanger there. Come back for more.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Maybe I will.
Fine. Then don't find out how he gets caught. Because remember in the beginning when he got executed?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you also mentioned his lawyer 5 minutes ago. So obviously he has a trial.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And he pleads insanity. Yeah. There's little sprinkles of the future.
Which clearly he didn't get insanity because he got executed. So.
Good job.
The pieces are coming together.
You're putting them all together. All right. Well, that was Sinister.
And we were sarcastic.
And we hope you keep listening.